Welcome to Simple Living Works. I'm Jerry Iverson. It's my pleasure to present part of Tony and Shane Uncut, the complete dialogue in 8 episodes between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne on simpler living and global justice, which became the DVD Simply Enough, reissued recently by World Vision Canada as Choose Justice. We at Simple Living Works believe that simple living really does work. Voluntary simplicity, choosing to live simpler lives, is a faithful, satisfying, effective, and comprehensive lifestyle. Our mission is to equip people of faith to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly. We produce a half-hour podcast twice a month, hopefully educational and inspiring for you, your family, and your congregation or group. To learn more about us, listen to episodes 1 and 2. In this episode, I present one of the 8 parts of Tony and Shane Uncut, a conversation between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne. To learn how this powerful dialogue came to be, listen to episode number 3 called The Saga of Simply Enough. The link is in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Our hope is that you will be so motivated by this series that you will want to share the message with others in your congregation or group. Order a copy of the DVD Choose Justice with this extensive discussion guide from the store at thesimpleway.org for only $10. It is also available from World Vision Canada and from Tony Campolo's store. All those addresses are given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. See pictures of Alternative's crew in Philadelphia producing the original and links to the bonus segments. Links are in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. To get better acquainted with Tony and Shane and their ministries, follow the links in the show notes.
So I had a friend that's a pastor and also a dad, so they were trying to think about Christmas a little differently in a way that honored Jesus. And so they had the kids study about the first Christmas, you know, as Jesus was born. They're like, what did Jesus get? Like, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Not even real good gifts, you know, and just 3 of them. And so the kids decided themselves that they said that they didn't want to get any more gifts than Jesus got, you know, so 3 gifts was it. And he said even then his kids decided to give some of their gift, you know, like one of their gifts away to another kid. And I think we really have to think differently about how is Jesus at the center of this incredible celebration where we enter, you know, God really. We celebrate God entering the world in Jesus. And one of my other friends is a pastor. He's like, yeah, well, I don't know why we decorate everything up, spend all this money and get a Christmas tree at the altar and all those things. He's like, for us, we decided we wanted to think about the way that Jesus was born in the middle of a genocide, in the middle of struggle, and in a place that stank, you know? And he said, so we went through the before the Christmas service and we dumped manure all over the floor. And he said, so we had just, you know, poop all over the, and if folks come in, they're all their nice clothes and they sit down and they're like, what is that smell? And he's like, but everybody walked away and knowing that they smelled the things that Jesus did and they had new eyes to see the Christmas story that year.
One of the things that we've become aware of is that giving presents is becoming increasingly obscene. I mean, the cost of it. The fact is that you got a problem at Christmas. Not that you don't have enough money to buy presents, but why? What do you buy for people who have
everything?
The answer to that's pretty obvious. What should you buy for people who have everything?
Nothing, right.
But nobody's got the guts to pull it off. Nobody's got the guts to come down Christmas morning and say nobody's getting anything because you already got everything. So more and more we're pushing our kids to not give presents of a material nature. To say to a grandchild, you know what I'd love for you to do? I'd love for you to write a poem. Mm-hmm. The Kennedy family used to do this. They're so rich, you write a poem so that everybody would sit down and write a thoughtful poem at Christmas and read the poem on Christmas morning. What a wonderful gift to save these poems. My grandson, for instance, recites a chapter of scripture. You know, he knows that I love that kind of thing. So Christmas morning, you know, little Roman gets up and recites this chapter from the Bible. Now, what in the world could he possibly give me that would make me as thrilled as that? To make stuff, you know, to get some paper and some glue and make something, to do a craft thing, right? And to get the kids to understand that a gift that is meaningful is a gift not that you buy, but a gift that you create. And that is, goes on, and I guarantee you, the older people will appreciate these things much more than anything else. And the important thing is to recognize that at Christmas, people basically hate the holiday. I mean, that's a horrible thing to say. But you go to a supermarket or a department store at Christmas, and stand in the line, and you see people are tense and angry. And if you just turn to the person next to you and say, "Don't you hate what we have to go through this time of the year?" You'll get one standard answer, especially from the women: "I hate it. I've got to cook. Gonna cook a big turkey, and we're all gonna overeat, and we're gonna, I'll be in debt for the next 6 months paying off these bills." They all hate it, and the question is, well, if you hate it, why do you do it? And the answer is, because everybody else is doing it. We are lost once again in Babylon, and we are manipulated by forces outside of ourselves, and we have lost our individuality. And we have lost the capacity to say no. I really love those places in Scripture where people say no. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're going to be thrown into the fiery furnace unless they renounce God. And their response is, "We're not going to renounce God. We'll throw you into the furnace." And note, they don't say, "Well, we know that God will save us." This is, if we burn, we burn. But the answer is still no. And the thing is, the willingness of people to say no. The apostles are confronted by the authorities saying, "Will you stop preaching the gospel?" No, we cannot help but speak of what we have seen and heard. The ability to say no, and it's about time that we stand up and say no to the obscenity of what Christmas has become in our society. And I'm not one of these that we've lost the meaning of Christmas. It's beyond that. It's what Christmas is doing to us. It's ruining us. It becomes an orgy of spending, an orgy of gluttony, an orgy of selfishness. And worse than that, it communicates a stupid value. And here it is. It's the little song that I learned to sing and you learned to sing. "Oh, you better be good. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town." Note, good kids get presents. He's making a list and checking it twice. He's going to find out who's naughty and nice. The kid that's naughty gets what? Nothing. So that poor kid has been reared in a culture that tells him that if you don't get a lot of stuff for Christmas, you're not a good kid. Do we really want to communicate that value? Or do we want to get rid of that song with all of its negativism? I'm not getting rid of Santa Claus, but I just think that Santa Claus ought to do something more than just give out a lot of presents to kids. He ought to stand for something better than that.
Yeah, and not a Christmas that just belongs to the rich. Because I think a lot of poor kids, they end up thinking, you know, this thing's just for rich kids, and what does Jesus have to say to me? And it's such a scandal. You know, I remember one kid in our, this is a kid in our neighborhood. He was a part of robbing a store, and someone got shot, but it ended up being a police officer that wasn't in uniform. And so, you know, in Philly,
it's a
big deal, you know? So they all were at one point put on death row. They were, you know, locked up possibly for life. And, they asked this kid, "Why were you a part of that?" He didn't pull the trigger or anything. They said, "Why were you a part of all that?" And he said, "My mom needed presents.
Yeah.
We needed presents for Christmas." And all that's wrapped up in that, of the culture and of like, boy, there's got to be something better to Christmas than that, you know?
Yeah. We're so worn out. Incidentally, we have a Christmas tree in our house. Do you see our Christmas tree?
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful Christmas tree. Wherever we travel, I try to bring something home that we hang on the tree, see? So when we decorate the tree, it's a great thing. This was given to us by this missionary. This was given to us by First Church of Poughkeepsie, New York. And it's a wonderful time decorating the tree. And as a matter of fact, it takes us about 2 to 3 nights to decorate the tree. There are hundreds of ornaments, and they're not the kind of things that you buy. They're all kinds of memorabilia, and it's wonderful. But it's now the middle of May. Our Christmas tree is still up. It's an artificial tree because we don't want to, buy a new tree every Christmas, and mm-hmm. and we think it's wasteful. So enjoy talking about the ornaments, because the ornaments have special meaning to us. And it gets to the point where, once again, one of the great Christmas presents that our children will give to us, if you come to our house and see our tree, we can point to you and say, Lisa made that one. She's now 48 years old. When she was 6 years old, she made that. And do you see this string of paper chain? Bart made that when he was in the second grade and brought it home. And all of these things have incredible memories to us. Mm-hmm. And it's gone down memory lane. And so every time we looked at the trees this past Christmas, we say, we ought to take it down. I'm looking at it. People come to our house and they walk in, and here's this Christmas tree in the middle of May. What is this still up? Because it all has meaning to us that's not simply tied up with the affluence of the Christmas season.
Yeah. That's what our family's been. We've been given presents to each other that are stories, So I'll give a picture of a pair of boots that I got from my buddy Murphy on our block, or I'll tell a story about something that we made together. We make candles in the community, so I gave candles to all my family members and told them about making that together, But the other thing that we do as a community is we at the simple way in Philly, we have a little celebration that we do called Buy Nothing Day. So on the Friday after Thanksgiving, the biggest spending day of the year, we have a celebration outside the mall where we give away stuff, and we give away alternative ideas for gifts, like give somebody a massage, or give somebody a mixtape, make somebody dinner, do dishes. And so it's got all these different things. And then we have folks that'll walk by, and they'll be going to shop, and we'll be talking about Buy Nothing Day. And we hung this banner that said, buy less, love more, and laugh harder. Spend less money and more time together. And everybody will walk by and they'll think, yeah, that makes so much sense, and we, part of it too is we got some good circus folks, so we're juggling and we're on stilts and everything, and folks will take a flyer from someone that's 11 feet tall, that talk about the consumption going on and why does that make sense. And so it's fun to have something else that we're celebrating in the middle of it. Incidentally, the mall told us that you can't we were giving away pizza at one point, and they told us we couldn't give away pizza outside the mall because it would take money from the food court. Yeah. And we kept giving out pizza because we said we believe it's our right to give away pizza. And they, honest to goodness, I kid you not, they arrested us. They put two of us in handcuffs, took us into mall custody, right? We go into this little room with all the mall security, and they said, you now have a Bannon bar from the Gallery Mall, the main mall in Philadelphia. So they took a picture of us and they put it up on their mall right next to what looks to be a lot of other panhandling and homeless folks, right? There's this, the mall's most wanted, right? And so I'm permanently banned from the Gallery Mall. So I can't shop if I want to,
They wouldn't let Jesus feed the 5,000, they
not
just would
a
look.
Chance.
One of the things that I wanted to get to is somebody said to me, I was talking about my jacket earlier. Somebody said, how much did that jacket cost? Here's a very interesting point. I have to be very careful because my inclination is to play the game of saying, this was a very inexpensive jacket. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. I think this jacket cost, something like $70. The point is that you have to be careful in this embracing the simple lifestyle, that you don't buy cheap goods that are going to wear out and be thrown away within 2 weeks. You don't have to have a lot of jackets, but make sure you got something that's going to last. Something that a year from now, 2 years from now, is going to look as good as it does today. A lot of the stuff, people buy cheap, and within 2 weeks, I mean, you live in your neighborhood. How much stuff gets thrown away?
Yeah, I mean, that's why there's a dollar store in every corner. Because folks buy stuff and it's disposable. I mean, cameras, whatever, it's disposable.
Yeah.
You know, you just buy it, can opener. It doesn't last more than a few months because it's a cheap can opener, you know?
Yeah.
And so you end up continuing to feed into disposable
so,
society.
So, make sure that you don't buy junk. Another thing to note is that some of Peggy's best clothes have been bought in thrift shops. Now, no thrift shop would sell anything as bad as that. But you can get some really nice stuff at thrift shops at a minimal cost. I was in Cardiff, Wales, and to do a speaking thing, and I got a note, I got a call, and it was the Lord Mayor of Cardiff wanted to have me for dinner. And fine. And I got a call back from the guy that was hosting me and saying, do you have a suit? Well, I didn't have a suit. I said, well, you really should have a suit. So I called my wife. I said, I don't know what to do. I said, I hate to buy it. I don't need a suit. She said, well, you can always use a good suit. Go out and get a suit. So I leave the place. I'm walking down. And I pass this thrift shop. And I walk in. And I said, do you have any suits? I went over. Here was a suit. It was magnificent. I put it on. It fit perfectly. I went to the dinner, and all that the mayor was talking about was, that suit, that's really a beautiful suit. And he wanted to know, how did I pack that and carry it all across the Atlantic to keep the crease? It's so nicely pressed. And it cost me, I kid you not, it cost me $6 for the suit. And it's beautiful. I still have it. It's a great suit. So whenever I have to wear a suit, I pull out the $6 one.
Yeah.
So there are ways to cut back, and still not look like you.
Yeah. Well, you've been giving me a pretty hard time.
Yeah. Well, that's all right.
I will have to say I branched out this last year, and I got some fur fabric polar fleece, and so I made a polar fleece.
So when those fundamentalists say, "Did you lay your fleece before the Lord?" you say, "Yeah, I am."
I actually have another outfit that I wear when I go high church. You know, Episcopal. It's very sleek, and I made it. But I think it's a good point though, because we often say that simple living doesn't mean ugly living.
Yeah.
Because the city really needs beauty.
And you don't need to spend a lot of money. You know, there was a couple that worked for our ministry, Urban Promise, which we have in four different cities across the United States, the other affiliates of the APE, our organization. Mm-hmm. And she had previously graduated from a university in interior design.
Mm.
How to fix up houses and spend a fortune to impress people. Well, she married this guy, and they came and worked with us in the summer, and they stayed on, and they got married. A lot of people who come and work together in these situations end up getting married. And they bought this row house in Camden for about, I think it was about $6,000, because you can't, nobody will sell, nobody was buying Camden, so they bought this house for $6,000, and they made a decision that they would not buy anything from the house.
Mm.
They went down to the trash heap every day and picked up sofas and and they decorated the place. And when it was all finished, this every room decorated to the hilt with trash.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia Inquirer came in and did a story on the house. And it wasn't in the living section, it was in the Better Homes and Gardens section.
That's great.
This house was so, and they made a big thing. Look how beautiful this house was. And they did it because they wanted to communicate to the people who lived in this very beat up, run down neighborhood. You don't have to spend a fortune to have an attractive looking living room. You don't have to spend an arm and a leg to have a house that has some beauty to it. Come and visit us.
Mm-hmm.
Come and have dinner at our house.
Yeah.
We will show you that you can have a good house. You don't have to go to the trash heap like we did. You can go down to the secondhand store. But the idea of spending tens of thousands of dollars when you can decorate your house beautifully at a fraction of that cost.
Yeah.
And they were a living demonstration to that community.
Yeah.
It was very, very important.
One of my housemates was, she was cooking these exquisite dinners at one of the fancy restaurants down on Walnut Street. And she snuck us into one dinner. It was $100 a plate, right? And so we're just snagging all kinds of foods we can't even pronounce. You know, we fit right in. You know? But then she started going, what am I doing? You know, what am I using my gifts for? And she started hanging out in her neighborhood and seeing folks that were really hungry, right? And going, maybe there's something different I should be doing. And so she started cooking like good meals for folks that hadn't eaten in a day or two, you know?
Yeah.
And baking cookies with kids on her block. And like it was bringing her to life, it was bringing our neighborhood to life. And she's a different kind of chef now than she was before, because we had one time when we were eating crab legs with homeless folks, you know? We're like, yes, that's what it's about. But I really believe that that's where Jesus is eating a lot of meals, and ultimately the gospel is lived out at dinner tables and living rooms and times where we come together, where two or more are gathered.
You know, I'm a sociologist by trade, and you were a sociology student, and you heard me talk about Emil Durkheim,
mm-hmm.
and the concept of rituals.
Mm-hmm.
And I always would have lectures in my family course on family rituals. How do you celebrate birthdays? How do you celebrate Christmas? How do you celebrate Thanksgiving? There are rituals, and the Bible is full of these days where you just don't set aside a day, but there are rituals that you perform. Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof, the opening song, tradition. Because of our traditions, everything is tradition. And eating together as a family is a ritual. And I had a faculty member when I was in graduate school, James H.S. Bossert, we used to say, the family that eats together stays together. You know, we use the word phrase together, stays together. And what he is basically saying is, as you sit around the table and eat, certain things happen.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, it's the only place where you can educate children. Mm-hmm. Stop to think of it. You want your children to have your values. Where are they going to pick them up? Are you going to sit them down and lecture? Now, kid, here's what you're supposed to do, and this is what... Nobody listens to that. The kid will sit there and listen. Can I go now?
Mm-hmm.
But around the table, as you talk about what happened in the course of the day, there was a new kid in school. What's his name? I don't know. Nobody talked to him. What? Bart, a new boy came into your class and you didn't talk to him? I'm not interested in what everybody else did, but you're supposed to be a follower of Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't Jesus? And it's in the conversations around the table
mm-hmm.
that the kids begin to pick up the values, the principles, the teachings of what the gospel is all about. And that's it. Secondly, there is a kind of solidarity that is created around the dinner table. I do a lot of talks to corporate people. And if I'm dealing with a group of corporate executives, I usually will ask this question. How many of you, when you were growing up, had dinner with the entire family sitting around the table, and you sat down at a specific time, and it was the same every night? Would you raise your hands? Every night you had dinner with your family, and you sat down at the same hour, and you probably sat around the table for at least an hour. Would you raise your hands? Almost every hand will go up. And then I'll say, how many of you today have a specific hour for dinner in which the whole family sits down and talks and visits for an hour? Would you raise your hands? There can be 300 people there. 10 hands will go up. And you realize that we're falling apart as a society. And we're wondering why our families are not lasting, why divorce rates are so high. Because the rituals that bring us together and mold us together and solidify us together. The only time where people really understand this is Thanksgiving. Because Thanksgiving is the one time in the year where the whole family sits down at the same hour, eats exactly the same food, makes exactly the same comments, like, great filling, what's in it? Same thing as last year, idiot.
Yeah.
Nothing changes. And then one day, the kid calls you and says, the gang's going down for Thanksgiving break, we're going down to Florida, it's been tough up here at school, we're taking a little R&R. And your wife on the extension line says, but Bart, we always have Thanksgiving together. And he says, you act like it's the end of the world. I'm not going to be there for Thanksgiving. It's a big deal. He has never read Emil Durkheim.
Mm-hmm.
Neither has she. but it is the end of the world, because our families are held together by collective rituals, eating together, mm-hmm. praying together, doing things ritualistically, always done at the same place and the same time, yeah. vacations, birthdays, celebrated in a particular manner. This is all part of the Christian lifestyle.
Yeah.
Are there rituals that define your family? Mm-hmm. Are there rituals that you go through? Do you put your kid to bed with rituals? Mm-hmm. We do in our house. Yeah. We did as our kids were young.
Yeah.
Rituals that create a sense of well-being, of security, of belongingness. And without these rituals, as Tevye says, we all become as shaky as a feather on the roof.
Yeah.
You've been listening to one of the 8 parts of Tony and Shane Uncut, a conversation between Tony Campolo and Shane Claiborne. To learn how this powerful dialogue came to be, listen to episode number 3, The Saga of Simply Enough. The link is in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Our hope is that you will be so motivated by this series that you will want to share the message with others in your congregation or group. Order a copy of the DVD, Choose Justice, with his extensive discussion guide from the store at thesimpleway.org for only $10. It is also available from World Vision Canada and from Tony Campolo's online store. All those addresses are given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. See pictures of Alternative's crew in Philadelphia producing the original and links to the bonus video segments. Links are in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. To get better acquainted with Tony and Shane and their ministries, follow the links in the show notes. Each episode of Tony and Shane Uncut, including the podcast and the show notes, will be released to iTunes, Stitcher, and the other podcast directories about the 1st and the 15th of the month, May through August. However, if you want to hear more of the 3.5-hour dialogue, you can. Go to simplelivingworks.org, window number 3, click the episode index, scroll down to the backup section, click on the episode of your choice. Sorry, you can only download episodes into your iPod or smartphone, as each episode with its show notes is released to iTunes and Stitcher. Those instructions will be given in the show notes of each episode, so if you want to listen to one and then hear more, you can. You're welcome to share your thoughts on these subjects. Email a message to feedback@simplelivingworks.org. Leave a message on our Facebook page or on the Simple Living Works blog. All those addresses are given in the show notes at our website, simplelivingworks.org. Click on window number 3. In addition to this podcast and its show notes, we produce new Simple Living Works blog several times a week. We hope you'll read it and subscribe. This blog is the companion to our 2-times-a-month podcast. The content is different, though the subject is the same. Click on blog at the top of the show notes for each episode. As one of our early and long-standing supporters of Alternatives, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, known as the ELCA, has pledged to keep a copy of each resource produced by Alternatives and to make copies available by request at a nominal cost. Feel free to contact them at the offices near Chicago. The complete contact information is given in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. In the next episode, I present the next of 8 parts of Tony and Shane Uncut. If you haven't subscribed yet, we hope you will through iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Subscriptions are free, and they keep you current automatically when we post something new. Remember to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Pinterest. Urge your friends to do the same. Provide your email address to receive our monthly Simple Living Works e-newsletter. We do not solicit or accept donations, nor do we sell anything. All our resources and services are free of charge. We're an all-volunteer organization. We do, of course, recommend and urge alternative giving. Thanks to John Pitney and the band Earth Mama for the music on our show. Find details in the show notes at simplelivingworks.org, window number 3. Thanks also to World Vision Canada, who now owns the audio of Tony and Shane. Until next time, this is Jerry Iverson of Simple Living Works Podcast, wishing you well as we strive to challenge consumerism, live justly, and celebrate responsibly.
Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply. simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can simply live. Learn to live simply so others can live.